There's also a different kind of intimacy that gets developed when you think about remote work, which is getting a peek into people's lives, right? You can see their office, you can see their bedroom, you can see their child. I'm reminded of the CNN interview where this guy's kid came in and he's stumbling over himself to get the kid out while pretending to maintain his composure. My office at my house has a big open space. It's the one you guys are used to seeing in the background. And my son, he's only 2 years old, but he's learned, hey, when dad's on calls, don't disturb him. When dad gets off calls, you can come see him. So sometimes when I hang up, you hear him running down the hall going, you know, Baba, and he's like running down to give me a hug. But sometimes he'll run in just while I'm on a call. And I do nothing to prevent him from doing that. I sometimes will pick him up, give him a huge hug, put him on camera, tell him to say hello to everybody. And that's a kind of intimacy you can't get in the office or is very rare, except maybe bring your kid to work day.
This episode of the Startup Podcast is brought to you by Vanta. You might know that sinking feeling. You're about to land a big contract when they ask about compliance, SOC 2, ISO, PCI, Essential 8. You've just snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. Not anymore. Vanta massively accelerates your compliance efforts and allows you to get those life-changing deals back on track. Don't wait until it's panic stations, though. Get started with Vanta today. They're offering 20% off their prices just for TSP listeners. Do yourself a favor. Hit pause, go to vanta.com/TSP, that's VANTA.com, to get that 20% off.
You're listening to the Startup Podcast. This is an educational episode. In-depth masterclasses about the concepts essential to building, running, and investing in Silicon Valley-style startups. Whether you're a founder, investor, or operator in a startup, you'll gain insights into the principles that power high-growth disruption the same way Facebook, Google, and Uber do it. The conversation starts now.
Hi, I'm Yaniv.
And I'm Chris.
And in today's episode, we're going to talk about hybrid versus remote versus in-person. This is something that didn't used to be an option, right? If you were starting a startup or running any business, you got some office space and you all huddled together and worked together in person. Then, of course, COVID happened and everybody went fully remote for a while. And then it ended. And I think ever since it ended, there's been this kind of weird situation, Chris, where it's been like not really clear what the right thing is to do. There've been debates and holy wars that have generally been about people's personal preferences, but not really getting to the bottom of, if you're a startup, how do you make this choice? The aim of this episode is not to say this is the right way to do things, but really talk about remote and in-person and hybrid work styles and what you need to think about in making the decision and in implementing it. And in particular, I think this has been under-discussed, is what does it mean to be a hybrid workplace? There's a lot of nuance there. And I think hybrid's a very popular model these days, and those nuances are not considered. And I've seen that hurt startups. So let's jump in, Chris.
For just a little background on myself, I've pretty much worked remotely for most of my career. Even when I moved to Silicon Valley, I was working remotely from my apartment with a founder and CEO who was down in the South Bay and with people in Russia and all over the place. So I feel like the world has kind of caught up to me. I've had remote work for the whole time.
Chris is a man from the future.
When I went to work for Uber, actually, the idea of working from the office was one of my hesitations. I was like, hang on a second, I got to put my pants on and I got to have a shower. This is not fun.
A fun fact for those watching on video, Chris is actually not wearing any pants right now. I saw him stand up before.
That's right. And so I've been partly amused and partly delighted and partly confused as the world has shifted to remote during COVID and struggling with hybrid. And you're right, Yaniv, you can't just stumble into this. There are advantages for startups because there's less, let's call it, pressure to get an office, and offices can be quite expensive. It's great for startups because there's now a global pool of talent that you can draw on. Some of the best people in the world are available, even though they might not be next door. But there's also disadvantages for startups around innovation and disruption can take high bandwidth, high intensity collaboration between people. And sometimes that happens in hallways and in meeting rooms. Invention can be, let's call it, weakened when people aren't in the same room. This is a lot of the stuff we want to unpack through the episode.
So I thought it might be worth just starting with not so much a history lesson, but maybe a recap of the last few years, right? Which is a journey that we've all kind of gone through together, right? Prior to COVID, there was what I would call the old normal. And the old normal was in person. And people like you, Chris, and I had worked at the time with some people who made a specialization of always being remote. They were the exception that proved the rule. Work was something you went to work for. You went to the office and you all work together. And no one really questioned it. It was one of those interesting things where a lot of the technology for remote work had been developed for a long time, but no one really used it, right? And there was always this question of how do we actually get workplaces to adopt things like video conferencing when there's a strong expectation that you go into the office? In answer to that rhetorical question, the answer is a global pandemic. That is how you get that to happen, right? So one of the fascinating things about COVID, organizations found themselves with all the tools they needed to work remotely, which was a really lucky thing. Imagine COVID having happened even just 5 or 10 years earlier, let alone 50 or 100, as disruptive as it was to all of us. Imagine what that would have done to the workplace, to the global economy. And so people are like, hey, wow, I can work from home. I don't have to wear pants. I can see more of my kids. People fell in love with remote. And not only employees. Employees certainly fell in love with remote, but employers too. They were like, oh, this is great. We can save money on office space. We can hire people from all over the world. We can get them to work longer hours. They're always on. Plus, we look innovative. So people fell in love with remote.
Yeah, I think they fell in love with the remote because they got a taste of it, certainly, and they were forced to adopt it. I actually think just taking a step back and looking at the meta landscape as well, I think it also intersected with another trend, which is this kind of disillusionment with capitalism, with democracy, with the way things worked, which was also accelerated by COVID, right? And people feeling like, I want more work-life balance. I want more time with my children, with my partner. And so there is the enjoying the idea of being able to work from home. And then there is the rebalancing of the place of work in your life. And I think those two things together have created a real pull towards remote or hybrid work as well.
Okay, that's actually a really good point, which actually makes my next point more interesting because I can blend it together. So you're right, of course. There was this sense that COVID and the forced remote work was the next stage of post-industrialism. We'd had this world where ever since the Industrial Revolution, more and more people had to gather in the same place, working very fixed hours, the 9 to 5 at the office, you have to commute, all of that. It's sort of quite industrial era way of working. And we've just taken it across to the knowledge work environment, right? Now we're living in the information knowledge economy. And COVID forced that break and said, hey, we don't actually have to come into the office. You can see that now. And then a lot of the other assumptions that go along with coming into an office, which is sort of the fixed hours and fixed location and all of that, started falling apart as well. And so people started becoming digital nomads and people started working different hours. And there was all this flexibility that went beyond simply not coming into the office that came along with it.
So actually, again, to continue this bit of a philosophical bent, this is also connected to a meta trend that I've been writing about on and off for years, which I call unbundling, the great unbundling, where all aspects of society are being disconnected from their prior assumed containers. So you imagine like AI is unbundling intelligence from biological brains, as an example, or songs are being unbundled from albums. But this is work is being unbundled from offices. And jobs are being unbundled from employers and people are moving to freelance. There's this continuous detachment of these things that were seemed inexorably linked. And it's often powered by technology, but I think it's being powered by just a lot of cultural trends. And COVID just massively accelerated all of that.
But here's a sting in the tail. To come to the last bit of our history lesson, COVID ended. And I would say the honeymoon is over. I think there was a certain expectation from at least a large portion of the community. I think I probably included myself in that. COVID had basically initiated this phase shift that it had accelerated what was going to happen anyway. And that whatever changes or progress, however you'd like to view it, were made during COVID were kind of locked in place, right? So we've gone from working in the office to working remotely. Now COVID ends, but we've all gotten used to working remotely and that will continue. That has not happened. Over the last couple of years, more and more companies have been calling their employees back to the office. There's even like a three-letter acronym, the RTO, return to office, mandates that have been coming out everywhere, right? And there's been a certain amount of, you could say, warfare between employers and employees. I think, like I said at the beginning, a lot of shouting backwards and forwards from various parties about which is the optimal way of working, which, again, I am not here to have a single prescription, but what it's done now is if you're a founder of a startup, we're in this world where it's very much not settled, right? Where we have a new choice to make. Again, a few years ago, you didn't have to make this choice. It's like, hey, I'm founding a startup. I'm getting a garage somewhere, a cheap office space, and we're going to go work there. Now it's like, okay, are we going to be fully in person? Are we going to be fully remote? Or now that COVID has ended, we have this new Frankenstein's monster option of so-called hybrid, which is some combination of the two. And then as we will go through, even there's a whole lot of decisions we need to make. So I thought the way we'd structure this is start with the pros and cons of each. And importantly, as we go through, talk about some of the considerations that you might need to make in implementing that policy correctly and how it might intersect with the culture and with the working style that you want your startup to have. Sound good?
Sounds great. Let's do it.
All right. So let's start with in person, right? The old bunch of meat sacks in a room together building something, the way it's always been done.
It reminds me of Star Trek, ugly sacks of mostly water. That was how one of the aliens referred to us.
Yeah, I remember listening to this comedy sci-fi parody of a bunch of aliens talking about humans. And it's like, they've got brains, but their brains are made of meat.
Those were the machines talking.
That was a machine, alien robot civilization.
And they were like, thinking meat, don't be ridiculous.
Exactly. Anyway, so in person, let's start with the disadvantages because they are more obvious to the sort of technocratic mind, right? The disadvantages of being in person are you all have to be in the same place and that place needs to exist. So it is more expensive to be in person. You need to have a facility. You need to have office space. It is less convenient for your employees. They need to commute. I also think from a hiring point of view, it makes hiring more difficult in two ways. First of all, you are limiting yourself to a talent pool that is a commutable distance from your office. If you are based in London, you can't hire people in Accra to work for your in-person startup. So that's one. And I think the other thing is, like I said, the falling out of love with remote work has been uneven. Employers have fallen out of love with it more than employees. A lot of employees are now only willing to consider job opportunities that will allow them to work from home.
And there are other disadvantages, right? Like just the wasted time of sitting in traffic and commuting back and forth, which could be productive, either spending time with your family or spending time at work. There's the endless coffee breaks and snack breaks and interruptions and distractions, right? And at the end of the day, people tend to have 3 or 4 hours of actual productive time at the office. So this can feel like really unproductive time that is eating away from your family time and eating away from your productive work time.
Offices are very distracting. Having worked in a hybrid environment, one thing I noticed is when I went into the office, I had a lot more chats with people about random stuff. And it was, in some ways, it was quite enjoyable in that, and we'll come to that in the pros. But also, in terms of actual focused work time, I found that in the office, there was a lot more of time taken away from these kind of casual social interactions.
Yeah, and the planning of work tends to be more haphazard because, you know, you get to come up with stuff in the hallway or in the meeting and people go off and do stuff, but there's no forcing function for people to be as organized as they might need to be if they're working remotely. Now, of course, moving into the positives here, there is an argument to be made that these haphazard, casual conversations in the hallway by the coffee machine actually engender serendipitous discovery across the org. So you bump into a product manager and you're like, oh yeah, Sally's working on this thing. Like, oh, I'm working on that. I need to go talk to Sally about that. Or, hey, I didn't think about these guys huddled over the corner. I should actually talk to him as I walk past him in the hallway. And so this distraction can actually be recharacterized as a kind of social lubricant, as a kind of serendipity engine and a way to create spontaneous value while hanging around in the office.
I think that's the core of it, right? Which is for all of the disadvantages, what you have is a bunch of people together in a room. So I think there are these two arguments, right? And they're both difficult to quantify. But the first is not only are we made of meat, we are made out of social meat, right? We are social animals. And when you talk about culture, when you talk about bonding as a team, when you talk about having that drive to succeed together, there is something about being able to see, smell, hear each other, breathe the same air at some deep primitive level that is important. And I think having that sort of cultural team cohesion and that understanding and empathy for each other is more easy when you are always in the same room. Now, the other is that context sharing. You can call it serendipity. I've never really bought the serendipity thing as such, you know, the old water cooler conversation. You might have some amazing interaction, but I'd call it nearly more the sort of background chatter, hearing bits of conversations happening here and there. And sometimes something might catch your attention and you're like, hey, can you tell me about that? That sounds relevant to me. Where if you're not in the office together, you never know that two people are discussing that thing. So you just get this background awareness that I think is important. And again, both of these things are hard to quantify. Maybe there are some academic studies happening on it now, but here's the thing I would say, Chris, and this is very personal. Next startup that I work at or for or found, it will be in person. And this is the interesting thing, right? Because I'm not necessarily arguing that it's entirely rational, But this is probably the same feeling that a lot of management is getting, that it's easy to characterize them as micromanager, control freak bosses or whatever. But I think the reason a lot of management is pushing return to office is something just doesn't feel like it's working as well from an organizational sort of cohesion point of view, from that context sharing point of view, and that you know what it felt like in the past and you want that feeling again. I really think because these two things are hard to quantify, the social connection and the context sharing, it can be easy to dismiss them as not particularly relevant. And the technocratic view is in-person is dumb for all the reasons we mentioned. It's expensive. It limits your access to talent. It is inefficient. These less tangible things seem to, for a lot of experienced leaders, have a meaningful impact on the ability to succeed together.
It's tough to say in my mind that this is an actual problem of productivity, or it's a problem of leadership feeling like they can drive accountability and control, or if it's fulfilling the social needs of our social meat puppets and it just doesn't feel as nice. Or the last possible category is maybe our families have a certain amount of utility beyond which it get frustrating, right? Like the whole bunch of divorces occurred during COVID, right?
Such a beautiful way of saying it. It's like you have a certain amount of utility.
Right, right. Diminishing returns on the amount of time I'm spending with you, my love. And so, you know, some combination of those things might be driving this. For Elon Musk, to hear him talk about it, he actually got really angry on stage. I saw him think of it as a moral issue, saying, how dare all of these white collar information workers feel like they can just work from home while making factory workers and janitorial staff show up at the office. And he got visibly angry on stage about the lack of moral clarity and the moral betrayal of that.
Yeah, that's an exceptionally stupid argument, of course.
Yeah, we always caveat about Elon Musk, but you know, it's just interesting that there are multiple dimensions to this and people are coming at it from all sorts of angles, but I think it's mostly being couched as a productivity and kind of serendipity or context sharing problem.
Yeah, this is the thing with productivity. I think measuring productivity is really hard. It's something we've talked about on previous episodes, right, Chris? So when we talk about post-industrialism, measuring productivity in a factory is really bloody easy. Measuring productivity in a startup or in any knowledge work is actually really hard because it's not about the number of words you type or the lines of code you create or the number of meetings you have or even the number of sales calls you take. It's about results, and really it's about results over the long term. And I think this is maybe the gap. This is what I'm feeling as an evil capitalist pig dog manager, is that perhaps when you look on a day-to-day basis, it feels like remote work or hybrid work should be and is more productive according to your sort of low-level productivity metrics. But then if you look back 6, 12, 18 months, and you're like, did we achieve better outcomes than if we had worked together? The feeling, and it is a feeling, is not really that we lost something important that we would like to get back by being in person.
Yeah, it's tough for me to say because most of my career has been remote. And the work that I do now is almost an X factor contributor who is supercharging the team, irrespective of whether they're remote or in person. And I use remote to my advantage. So I force a certain cadence of collaboration. I force a certain quality of planning and coordination by my nature of being emotionally, tactically, and physically disconnected from the team. I'm able to maintain an amount of clarity that the team sometimes loses because they're in the weeds and in the soup all day long. And so for my work, I find the remote work to be actually part of my superpower. But as it relates to everyday function of the team, the advice I've given founders is A, an office is expensive, and B, the only thing more powerful than a group of good people in a meeting getting stuff done is the group of the best people anywhere in the world working on that same problem. And so if you can get the best people in the world, I would rather that than getting mediocre people just because they're within driving distance of my office. And that's the way I think about the remote work question for startups.
That's a good segue to talking about remote, which of course it is the reverse of the in-person pros and cons, which is that you get access to the best talent, you get to save on office costs, and you get greater efficiency. But the downside if you accept that it's a downside, is some loss of vibe. It's definitely a very human argument. No one would say if you've got a bunch of robots connected by a high-speed network doing non-physical labor that you should gather them into the same location. It makes no sense. The only way it makes sense is because we are human, which is why it's a difficult argument to make. But of course, we are human, and that cannot be easily dismissed. But actually, I wanted to get a little bit more tactical with remote because I think there's two things I wanted to mention here. The first is there are two subvariants of remote work, I believe, that don't get discussed very much. And that is synchronous versus asynchronous. And what I mean by that is you can have a remote work environment where everybody works similar hours, not the same hours, but similar hours, which means you can have video calls and Slack conversations and things like that as part of your standard operating procedure. And that's generally done by, okay, in theory, we can hire anybody in the world. In practice, to be synchronous, you need to hire people within similar time zones. So for example, Circular, my startup, only hired people in the Asia Pacific region so that we could all work together in a synchronous way. The advantage of synchronous is it is somewhat taking the in-person style of working and translating it to remote. It's like, okay, we still have all of our ways of doing this. We still have our meetings. We still have chats and conversations and so on. We still all get together. We're just putting it on a screen. We're taking the meat out of it, but the rest of it kind of stays the same. Now, asynchronous is, I think, a bit more interesting in a lot of ways. Asynchronous is saying we could truly have people anywhere in the world, or even people in the same part of the world who work ridiculously different hours to each other. And that's fine. But what it means is we cannot really run our company on meetings and on Slack messages anymore. We need to think about how do we communicate and collaborate in an effective way when turnaround time to a message or a discussion is A, in writing, and B, could take hours. How do we run differently? Now, again, this is not new, actually. If you think about like open source projects, they've been operating that way for decades, but it is a fundamentally different working style. And I think when you say, oh, okay, we're remote, you have to say to yourself, okay, which style of remote are we? And be intentional about that, which is part of the point of this episode, is to say, you now have choices to make. The choice that you make is actually less important in some ways than that you do make a clear choice and that you then follow through on that. So when you say you're remote, you say, are we synchronous or are we asynchronous? And how do we make sure that our working style actually matches that up?
The next swag that we drop, Yonev, should be the choice you make is irrelevant as long as you make a choice, because that is one of our five or six recurring themes. So an ad for the merch store right now, go to shop.tsp.show and buy the last edition one merch, and the second edition will start having funny and relevant quotes on them. Yeah, so definitely you've got to pick your style intentionally, just kind of as a knee-jerk reaction to this idea of an asynchronous work environment. I'm less in favor of that right now. Obviously, when you go full remote and you've got people all around the world, there is going to be some asynchronicity. But what I would be striving for is centers of gravity around certain time zones and people shifting the bias, the bulk of their efforts, to try to overlap where possible. I think spending up to 24 hours waiting for an email when you need to get stuff done is a little much. And so when I'm working with companies, I will tend to adjust my time zone, make myself available to overlap with some part of their day so that at least the mornings or the evenings are aligned and we can get some synchronous work done. I think if people are refusing to be or unable to be on Slack or on voice or video calls in real time for any part of the day, I think that's problematic.
This episode of the Startup Podcast is brought to you by Vanta. The team at Vanta are passionate about helping you secure your business by vastly cutting down on the time to get compliant with frameworks like ISO 27001, SOC 2, and Essential 8. Vanta lets you close deals, sleep better at night, and get back to building your product. Help yourself and help the podcast by going to vanta.com/TSP for an exclusive 20% off deal. Let me take the other side of that. So in a way, like you said, you had a bit of a preview of being remote. Now, I've never worked fully remote, but what I did have a preview of from working at Google, whose product and engineering organization is spread completely haphazardly across the globe. So there was no geographic affinity at all. You could often be working very closely with a team on the other side of the planet, which meant that I had to work, in a sense, semi-asynchronously since the mid-2000s. Where it's like, okay, sure, you've got half your team sitting right next to you in the office, but the other half is on another continent in a different time zone, and you need to work with them. There are ways to do that really effectively, and in some ways, I think it is a purer expression of remote work to say, okay, we're not just sort of being skeuomorphic and taking how it was always done in an office and just transferring it onto a screen. We're building a way of working that is natively online, which means that it could be happening at any time of day, anywhere in the world. And I think if you do that, it can be really effective, but it requires a huge amount of discipline around communication and how you structure things so that people are not constantly getting blocked for 24 hours because some person didn't read their email properly and they were asked two questions and they only answered one of them and that sort of thing. So you need to be very careful about it.
I want to soften my stance on that. I think that maybe it was my old man coming out. I do think if you design it well, it could work. But I still think having overlaps where you're able to do stand-ups or do, you know, synchronous workshops together, I think is critical. I agree with you, Yane. If you have the right tools and workflows, you can do a lot of stuff asynchronously.
So this is what actually brings me to the other point I wanted to mention about in-person, which is particularly important for asynchronous, but important regardless, is you still need to get together in person from time to time, I'd say at least twice a year. So if you're going to be spread all over the world, it is really important for team cohesion to have some sort of company retreat, company offsite, where you bring everybody together to actually meet each other. And again, this does come down to us being humans. Yes, you will do work on these retreats. You will, you know, have long workshops where you're fully synchronous and you get to like brainstorm and use whiteboards and post-it notes, whatever it is you like to do. But more importantly, you get to know each other as living, breathing, super high definition, 3D, smelly people. And that is so important for that team cohesion. So you must have offsites. And yes, a lot of money can be saved by being remote, especially if you're in a high cost of labor country, you're able to hire people in a less expensive location, but you need to figure into your budget at some point, bringing people together. That's something that I think is not particularly negotiable. I know there are some organizations that are like, we all live in a cave and we've never met each other and it's fine. But I think those are the exception rather than a good role model to emulate.
Yeah. And I think irrespective of which of these you choose, you need to be careful about having some people in the boat and some people not in the boat, right? So where you have a few people remote and everybody else in person and the people that are remote are somehow second-class citizens, there needs to be a general culture of, even if you're in the office, you're part of this remote culture or this hybrid culture. And so zooming into meetings or to document things in a certain way, using asynchronous tools and tasks, you need to be careful about cultural bifurcation between the people in the office and people not. And the other thing I want to point out is remote does not necessarily mean outsourced.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In fact, it should not mean outsourced. You want to have people who are in the boat in the sense that they're employed by or wearing the jersey of the company, and they're enmeshed in the culture, they're incentivized, they have stock, they're part of the whole thing. We have other episodes where we talk about whether when you're bootstrapping, you should be outsourcing to agencies and so on. And these things are not the same, and you want to be careful about it. Even though they're not on shore, that doesn't mean they're not on the team.
You've kind of front run us to the next topic, which is actually the meatiest one, which is hybrid. Hybrid is anything that is not fully remote and not fully in person. This is the one where companies, including ones that I've been a founder of, have gotten themselves in a little bit of a pickle because hybrid is not one thing. The way I like to imagine this whole thing is as a spectrum, right? At one end of the spectrum, you have got fully in person, everybody in every day, same hours. At the other end of the spectrum, you've got fully remote, everyone's living in a cave with high-speed internet and never leaves the cave. And then you've got everything in between. And we call everything in between, hundreds of points on this spectrum, we call it hybrid. So there is no one thing that is hybrid. So the biggest mistake, going back to the slogan that we're printing on the t-shirt, is we say, oh, we're hybrid. But actually, underlying that term, there are dozens of choices that you need to make in order to have a coherent, effective workplace policy. And most founders and most organizations fail to make those choices and then fail to codify and enforce those choices. And so what you get, if I'm honest, is just a bit of a mushy mess where in a lot of ways you get all of these unpleasant externalities, one of which you mentioned, Chris, which is you've got the in-office crowd and the remote crowd, and you get this bifurcation of the culture and you get like cliques forming and all sorts of stuff like that. So if you don't do this well, what you end up with, Chris, is literally the worst of both worlds. You get the disadvantages of being remote combined with the disadvantages of being in person. You really need to be careful here.
Something else worth thinking about is the context sharing and the relationship building between people in an office. But there's also a different kind of intimacy that gets developed when you think about remote work, which is getting a peek into people's lives, right? You can see their office, you can see their bedroom, you can see their child. I'm reminded of the CNN interview where this guy's kid came in and he's stumbling over himself to get the kid out while pretending to maintain his composure. My office at my house, which I've just actually moved out of, has a big open space at the front of the house where I work from. And it's the one you guys are used to seeing in the background. And it's just a big open space. It opens up on the hall. And my son, he's only 2 years old, but he's learned, hey, when dad's on calls, don't disturb him. When dad gets off calls, you can come see him. So sometimes when I hang up, you hear him running down the hall going, you know, Baba, and he's like running down to give me a hug. But sometimes he'll run in just while I'm on a call. And I do nothing to prevent him from doing that. I sometimes will pick him up, give him a huge hug, put him on camera, tell him to say hello to everybody. And that's a kind of intimacy you can't get in the office, or is very rare, except maybe bring your kid to work day. But there's just so many subtleties and nuances to this. How do you define productivity? Is productivity being forced to work something for 8 to 10 hours a day? Or is it the freedom to skip the commute, skip putting your pants on, skip the endless inane chatter at the coffee making stand, and be able to just focus? Which of those two things is productivity? Is it maybe that we have to redesign and redefine productivity? What defines success? Are we here to work for a living, or are we here to live for work? I just think that when you broaden the picture out to looking at AI and looking at the disruption potentially of intellectual labor, and you start thinking about universal basic income, how does this all start to plug together? I recognize on today's episode, my role has been as the philosopher, right? But it's this tension between trying to get back to pre-COVID definitions of productivity and of work and of vibe, as you said, Yanev. And we could fail backwards, and that might end up being the better choice, or might end up being the way we default. Or do we fail forward and say, how do we rethink work-life balance, rethink capitalism, rethink what we define as productivity and invention? I think, like all things, the answer is going to be somewhere in between. We're going to try to take the best of both and move forward. But I do think it's worth being careful about defaulting to the old ways. I think there's an opportunity for something a little bit better.
Yeah, I think you could well be right. We're saying, in a sense, the same thing, or complementary things, which is that there is perhaps a new way of working that can take the best of remote and the best of in-person into something even better, using the technology that we have available, using the structures we have available, and using the goals we have as a society even better. The mistake that a lot of organizations make, that a lot of startups make, is there is no intentionality. There is no design that goes into it. Just say, oh, we're hybrid, we're flexible. Well, that's not going to get you very far, right? That's not going to get you the things you want. So let's talk about some of the things that can go wrong if you just kind of chuck it in there, right? I think the one that you mentioned is probably the biggest one, right? Which is the fact that you get the in-office people and the not in-office people, and that can become really problematic. You get clicks, you get side channels and back channels and informal ways of communication. You can get meetings that don't work very well, again, because some people are in person and some people are remote. And again, because with hybrid, we get the remote aspect, but it tends to come with that flexibility, right? So we end up without clear expectations of what the working hours are, if there are days when we all need to get together, whether we are synchronous and asynchronous, all of these things, right? These all come into it. What you end up with is this kind of hot mess where on any given day, you don't know whether some people will be in the office, or they'll be at home, or they'll be working in another time zone, digital nomading. You don't know what time they start. You don't know what time they finish. The people who are in the office tend to dominate the meetings, and the other people have their cameras turned off. All of this stuff, right? You get a lot of back and forth on Slack and a lot of missed context because certain things are discussed in certain places. That is, I believe, Chris, because entropy tends to maximize, that is the default of hybrid work unless you design it. And at that point, it's not just hybrid, it is your version of working that you have created for your startup. And that's really what I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked in a recent previous episode about culture and about the intentionality of your culture. And remote and hybrid work is a whole other layer of considerations that you need to add on top of your culture. When we talk about operationalizing your culture, you need to consider how you operationalize it to pierce the veil or pierce the headwind of the remote or hybrid worker. Yeah, intentionality in culture in general, but especially as it relates to the location and timeliness of the work.
That's right. And I think, at risk of repeating myself, if I want you to take one thing away from this episode, is you've got a bunch of work to do. You may not have realized it, but if you want your startup to not suck as a workplace, you need to design your flexible work policy or work style policy, whatever you want to call it. You cannot just ignore it, not making any choices, and assume it's going to work out for the best, because it won't. I'd love to just run through a list. I don't think this is an exhaustive list, but a list of some of the decisions that you do need to make, especially if you are a hybrid workplace. The first is, are you hybrid in the sense of people can choose? You have an office, people can choose to come to the office, but they can also choose never to come into the office, right? It's simply a facility that is there for people who want it. Or are you hybrid in the sense that there is an expectation that all employees come to the office at least sometimes? I think that's the really big one. One of the things I've seen go wrong is when you say, oh, we're a hybrid, flexible workplace, and then so-and-so never comes into the office. And then their coworkers complain. They say they never come into the office. And then their poor old manager has to say, hey, you never come into the office, it's bothering your coworkers. And then so-and-so says, but we're a flexible work environment and it doesn't suit me to come into the office ever. I didn't realize it was an expectation. That can get really unpleasant fast, and you suddenly get like a people management HR issue that you didn't even see coming. So decide on that. And then there's another level, right? If you say, no, hybrid means you come into the office sometimes. Well, how often? And then when? Can you just say you have to come in 2 days a week at least? Or do you need to say you come in Tuesdays and Thursdays, right? Because if you just say come in 2 days a week, then one person on a team might always come in Monday and Tuesday, and another person might only come in Thursday and Friday, and they're never in the office at the same time. So do you want the whole team to be in the office at the same time? Is that important to you? In that case, you need to say what days they are. You need to have a process for deciding what days they are. You need to have some idea of how that might change over time. Does everybody have to work similar hours? So I think the, you know, the days of 9 to 5 or 9 to 6 are pretty much gone. There'll be some flexibility, but do we say there is a window during the day when everyone's expected to be working? How do we set that protocol? Because again, otherwise you have a situation where you try to create a meeting and you realize that nobody's working hours overlap, especially if some folks are remote. So what are your working hours? Another huge one is, how are meetings conducted when some people are in the office and other people are not, which is most of the time. The default way is that everyone in the office huddle around a laptop and then you have everybody else dialing in. Now, what you end up there often is a situation where the people who are in the office dominate the discussion. And like I said, the other folks are just kind of more passengers in the discussion. So what we did at Circular is we said, even if you're in the office, everyone has to go to a separate room and dial in from their own laptop. Felt unnatural, made the meetings run better. But that was a cultural decision that we had to make. If you join a meeting, do you have to have your camera on? Another decision. Or in fact, do you prefer not to have meetings and do you want to have more of a written communication, more sort of Amazon style, so that we don't have to have so many of these issues around being in person or not? Do we have company-wide in-person get-togethers? How often? Will they be mandatory? So if somebody lives in another country, are we going to force them to travel in for that? All of these questions can come up, will come up. They have come up for me more than once for each of them. And again, the way to create an ineffective hybrid work culture is just to fly by the seat of your pants, wait till the question comes up, and then make up whatever solution you think comes in mind. Put some thought into it. Put some design into it. Consider what is right for you. And again, I'm not here to give you the answers. There is no one right way. This is not a recipe. This is a set of choices that you need to make in order to make the right startup culture for your mission and for your working style.
Yanev, I know it's very early days, but how do you think Vision Pro and products in this category change the game?
There's a term that was popular amongst certain enterprise vendors a few years ago. It seems to have fizzled out, but it's a shame because it's actually a good term, which is telepresence. What it was back then, it was sort of high definition video conferencing, sometimes with like eye tracking correction and that sort of stuff. And the idea is, as the term suggests, a feeling of actually being in the room with your other people. They were very expensive. They were selling these telepresence suites where you'd have like a screen behind each virtual chair. And the concept was good because what we're trying to do here is bridge that meat divide. Sorry to keep talking about this, but this is really what we're talking about. Why do we do video calls and not just audio calls anymore? Because you feel more human connection. It's a higher bandwidth channel for reading each other's signals than just audio. So then the question is, what comes after that? Higher definition, eye tracking, spatial component to it, and things like that. That is telepresence. I still think there's a pretty crappy setup, what we've got here, right? As we're sitting here with the headphones in, staring at a little camera that is still pretty low definition in the big scheme of things. I don't feel like I'm in the room with you. I'm nowhere close, right? It's great that I can see you, but I don't feel like I'm in the room. There are a whole lot of things about it that mean that I'm not in the room. And I think the Vision Pro or even the Oculus, you know, there was that whole joke with the Oculus and finally being able to get legs. This is what we're talking about, the spatial dimension of this. Can we create a situation where everyone is in the comfort and convenience of their own home, but they feel like they're with the other person? And I guess that's the holy grail. Eventually, well, it's either a holy grail or a dystopian hellscape. If we get virtual reality to the point where you really actually feel like you're in a different place to where you are, that you are interacting with people in real life in a multi-sensory way, then the trade-off pretty much goes away. The only thing you've got left really is time zones, Chris. After that, it's like you are both fully remote and fully in person. And that's pretty amazing.
You want to hear something funny? As you said, I'm not in the same room with you. And for the listeners out there, we've never actually met. So you never know.
Pretty crazy.
It's funny. Something clicked in my mind. I was like, oh yeah, we're not in the same room. Like for me, it actually feels like I am hanging out with people as I go from meeting to meeting because I'm so used to it. And when you said it and you forced my brain to acknowledge that, I felt a separation occur. And I was like, oh wow, yeah, that's right.
You see, I wish I could give you a virtual hug, but I can't. This looks weird.
It does look weird. And it's actually worth unpacking that a little bit more, which is people have reported more exhaustion when working on Zoom meetings because it's somehow more performative and it doesn't give you the cues that you think it does. I'm actually completely destroyed at the end of my back-to-back meetings. I attributed that to I don't get up, I don't walk around, I don't go waste time at the coffee machine. I'm intensely focused for the block of time that I'm working. My wife was used to me being wiped out at the end of my block of meetings. But then I started hearing other people saying, hey, these Zoom meetings are more exhausting than normal meetings. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess it's maybe the Zoom phenomenon or something. Whenever I put on a VR headset, and I just did it the other day to help my nephew set one up, I'm always blown away by how real it feels and how incredible it is. And I always ask myself, why don't I do this more? And after about 10 or 15 minutes, I'm exhausted. It's hot, it's muggy, and it's annoying. And I take it off in my face and I go, man, now I know why I don't do this more. And I don't do it again for like 2 or 3 months. So I think it will take great communication tools to make it work. It will take great battery life. It will take great virtual simulations of arms and legs and so on. But I think where the real innovation is going to have to happen from where we are today is in material science and comfort. The weight and the breathability and the permeability of this thing on your head. And I think that's something that feels like the investment is a little lacking and is going to be one of the killer features, I think. So we'll see where that goes.
I suspect Apple's investing in that because those sort of soft things that don't feel very high tech, like making it less heavy and better ventilated, that's exactly the sort of stuff Apple cares about. We'll see if the first version of the Vision Pro meets that standard, but I think over the next few years, we will see them push things forward.
Well, it's likely the Vision Pro may be the worst culprit of this in the first version because it's so heavy.
Mm.
And so it actually may be the worst in terms of sustainability over time, just usage time. Mm. But I agree with you, Yanev. If anyone's likely to focus on that over time, it'll be Apple.
But I think the interesting thing, and I don't think it's resolved yet, is do we try to simulate being together in person without the disadvantages? Or is there a way forward that says, hey, we are now augmented with tools that didn't exist, you know, 20, 50, 100, 1,000 years ago, and to continue to work in the same way is missing a trick, right? Do you just take an offline metaphor, and in this case, being in a room together and bring it online, or do you come up with something new and better? I think this is one's been harder to crack. That's the interesting thing, right? It's like remote work has not been the sort of easy transition to something that is fundamentally different from in-person work, which is why I think we're having this conversation.
One of my previous companies, Echo, we used to talk about this idea that news and media has moved online, but it was essentially skeuomorphic. They took the broadsheet or the newspaper article, put it on a page. And what Facebook and Twitter and TikTok realized and revealed is that digital native media looks nothing like a piece of paper. And yet CNN and Fox and ABC still to this day treat it like paper. And what they don't understand is that Facebook and Twitter and whatever, TikTok, are eating their lunch, not because of some of the things they think, like I've worked with these newsrooms and media companies. It's not because of the things they think. It's because they don't understand that there are digital native ways of packaging and delivering and these experiences. And so that's an example where the digital first analog to media was not moving pages to the internet. It was feeds and it was interactivity and it was UGC and it was all this kind of stuff. And so what you're alluding to, Yanev, is if we move into a virtual reality, it's not about a standard meeting room or a standard Zoom call or a standard whatever. What new metaphors might we invent so that there's this teleportation, context setting, and ambient awareness and intimacy that might take a completely different form and not take the form of rooms and meetings and desks? And is there some innovation there where we might rethink the way we spend time with each other?
I think we've completely failed so far. I remember that like 10 years ago, there was this excitement that Slack would transform how we worked. And it's just like an even more annoying version of email. So yeah, if you're an ambitious founder out there, here's one for you. Like reinvent how people work together. That sounds like a worthy world-shifting goal. So there you have it. These are the decisions you need to make about working remote versus in-person versus hybrid. The most important thing to do here is to make clear choices. Make sure that you have a clear policy, that you communicate it to your team when you have one, and that you enforce it. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a hot mess. Things have gotten a little bit more complicated. Good luck. Now, if you're currently struggling with all the different decisions you have to make as a founder to be able to run a high-performance team and be able to achieve your ambitious goals, you might want some outside help, and that is, Chris, where you come in. So if folks want to work with you, how do they do that?
Yeah, that's right. And so you can learn more about my advisory work over at chrissard.com/advisory and subscribe to my newsletter while you're there at chrissard.com/newsletter.
Okay. Now, folks, if you've been listening to this for more than an episode or two, then you have implicitly signed up to the pact. Now, we love you all, but what we do know, Chris, from the numbers is that most of you have not honored the pact. We have a lot more listeners than we have reviews, and we have shout outs on LinkedIn. So please, please, the best way to help us, if you care about what we're doing and if you want us to see, we've passed 100 episodes. If you want to see us hit episode 200 and 300, stop now. Make sure you follow us on YouTube and your favorite listening app. Write us a review and give us a shout out on your favorite social media app.
All right, Yaniv. Great chat as always.
Likewise, Chris. Have a good one.
All right. Catch you in the next one. Bye-bye.
This episode of the Startup Podcast was brought to you by Vanta. Vanta helps businesses get and stay compliant by automating up to 90% of the work for the most in-demand compliance frameworks. With over 200 integrations, you can easily monitor and secure the tools your business relies on. Head to vanta.com/TSP for 20% off their incredible offering and start unlocking extra revenue today.